Thank you for joining us on Easy's Community Focus, taking a look at the issues that matter in South Florida and the people and organizations that are making a difference. I'm Ellen Jaffe. As we are gearing up for the Broward Heart Walk next Saturday at Nova Southeastern University, the American Heart Association has been kind enough to loan us the president of their board of directors and director of cardiac care at Choice Physicians South Florida, cardiologist Dr. Tiffany Sizemore. For the purposes of just being conversational today, I'm going to call you Dr. Tiffany.
Okay.
Okay. So give us a little bit of your background first. I mean, you are so well known in our community as being an incredible cardiac physician. Where did you start and where are you now?
So I did the majority of my training in South, actually all of my training in South Florida. I did my residency and my fellowship in cardiology both at Palmetto General in Hialeah. And I kind of became involved in the Heart Association from the beginning from the Go Red for Women campaign, which is the campaign that helps push the initiatives and the education about heart disease in women, and that being their number one killer. And from there, I became just basically more and more involved in the Heart Association, and they asked me last year to sit as the president of the board of directors, which I obviously said yes to. And you know, that's kind of where I stand now. I take my role with the Heart Association extraordinarily. I'm very proud of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm in private practice in Fort Lauderdale. So,
what was it that motivated you to become a cardiac doctor in the first place?
Being a woman.
Okay. Well, we do still have the number one. It's still the number one killer in women.
Correct.
Right?
It's still the number one killer of women. We are very close to eliminating that, hopefully, through the efforts of the Heart Association and the research that continues to be done and the money that we raise to help with the research and education to women. But really, there's just not a lot of female cardiologists. And I felt like it was kind of an untapped resource. And I felt I could really make a difference, and I feel like I have.
Right.
So I think, you know, it was important. I mean, you'd be hard-pressed to find, probably more than 10 female cardiologists in South Florida.
There's
not a lot of us.
That's just so, you know what, let's make this also a call to our young women who are getting ready to go to college to consider becoming a cardiologist.
Yeah,
you know,
of
why
course.
Limit yourself?
Yeah. Right.
Do you find that women are more comfortable talking to you?
Yeah. Yeah, okay. I do. And you know, to be funny, it's nice because I get the female patients, and you know who runs the roost in the house is the women. So then I end up getting their husbands that come in very angry, like, my wife made me come in to see you.
So. What is it with them? They're like big babies, and we still have to tell them what to do. But thank goodness the women are there telling them. So with all that you've done as a cardiologist, and now with the Heart Association, what have you seen are the changes in people's behavior that is hopefully contributing to improvement?
I think, you know, it goes back to the basics. I think people are realizing you are what you eat. I mean, that's an old adage for a reason, right?
Yeah.
So, you know, we've had a lot of initiatives in regards to salt intake and education about, you know, the limiting of salt in our diets, especially just not adding salt really more than anything. And also just physical activity as a whole, being active, getting your heart rate up, you know, having that 30 minutes of aerobic exercise every day. I mean, we know that by exercising 30 minutes a day, we decrease our risk for heart disease and stroke tremendously. So we've really been trying to push that. And that's, you know, when we do the heart walk next Saturday, that's one of the things, obviously it's about is physical activity.
Why is that 30 minute number so important, and what level of exercise are we talking about?
So, I mean, really that 30 minute number really comes out of years and years of research.
Okay.
In terms of exercise, what I tell my patients, because it's very hard to tell someone to take their pulse, right?
Yeah.
There is kind of an exact kind of calculation that it needs to be. But I tell my patients, if you're not sweating, you're not working.
Oh,
so,
wow. Okay.
You know, you need to kind of feel like you're exercising. You know, if you're kind of strolling along like you're in the mall, that doesn't count, right?
Oh, wow.
So if you're not, you know, sweat needs to be dripping from your forehead.
Like, what about 2 hours at the mall?
No.
No, it does. So, okay.
I know people are obsessed with their 10,000 Fitbit steps. But
only if you're really working up a sweat.
You need to be, you know, you need to feel like you're exercising.
What's
right?
happening inside your body when you get to that level?
Well, your heart's pumping and it's becoming stronger. Ultimately, your blood pressure as you exercise goes up, but the exercise long term causes your blood pressure to decrease.
And there are all different kinds of things you can do for exercise. It doesn't have to be traditional walking.
Yeah, no, walking. I mean, some people like to jog, roller skating. I mean, it's aerobic. So the key with aerobic activity is it gets your heart rate up.
Okay.
Okay. So most people that are like, you know, they're doing CrossFit and they're lifting weights and it's wonderful, but their heart rates are not really going up and spiking like you would if you were running and jogging and rollerblading or skateboarding or swimming, for
instance. Okay, and does it have to stay up and be maintained at that high level?
Yeah.
Because, you know, I've heard that they say, well, and it's true, sex is good for you. And that is
30 minutes,
for,
all right,
hopefully,
have fun.
For, you know, an aerobic activity. But again, it's, you know, just starting and stopping isn't quite the same.
You know, look, there is some, there's reason, you know, this is medicine. There's research that goes back and forth with everything. But I think no one's going to debate the fact that the best thing you can do is get the heart rate up and keep it up for 30 minutes.
Okay.
Now, would other things, like you were saying, you know, 5 minutes here, 5 minutes there, am I going to tell my patients, I'd rather you do nothing than that? Of course not.
Right.
Right?
Okay.
So, but if you have the capability of doing the 30 minutes and keeping it up, then that's hands down the best thing.
Okay. And now that works to help prevent heart disease and also to increase your life expectancy.
Yes.
What's the impact?
So I'm going to flip it around, actually. We're going to talk about watching TV because that's, I think more people can relate to that.
Okay.
There's another big study, and again, it was kind of propelled by the American Heart Association, and it showed that adults that watch greater than 4 hours of TV per day had a 46% increased risk of death from any disease. Okay, any disease. That's and cancer's included. And an 80% increased risk of death from cardiovascular disease.
That number is staggering.
It's staggering. But if you think about it, let's say most people sleep, you know, 6 hours a day, and then you tack on 4 hours of television. That's 10 hours. You know, you're down to 14 hours in your day. I mean, you know, that 4 hours of television, that basically means that you're stagnant. You're not getting
right.
up. You're not moving. You're not doing things. Right?
And then we drive to and from
Correct.
Work, and that's probably another 2 hours
Correct.
A day.
Correct. And then the scary part is some experts are predicting that today's generation of children, right? So my child, for instance, who's almost two, will not live as long as their parents, which would be the first drop in life expectancy in an entire generation.
And especially, again, mind-boggling because we have so much knowledge now.
Of course.
You know, past generations, they didn't know what they were
right.
doing, but we know.
But, you know, I mean, we know, but I think at some point it's the adult's responsibility to kind of pass that information along to their children. And, you know, the video games are great, but, you know, you can't sit in front of the television for 4 hours.
Right.
You know?
Well, maybe we need some video games that get you up and dancing and moving.
They have them. I don't know.
Yeah. That's we're talking about a whole paradigm shift in the way people view the world and the way they raise
yeah,
their kids.
For sure.
And I guess that's a lot of what the American Heart Association does with reaching out and trying to educate people.
Yeah, you know, even in the schools, we have Jump Rope for Life mm-hmm. to get the children engaged. It raises money for the Heart Association. At the same time, they feel like they're involved. Even the children at the schools, you know, we have the heart walks in both Broward and Miami. We do the heart balls, which is, you know, a higher level, more philanthropic type of an event to raise the money. So we really try and touch every aspect of our community as much as we can to get the awareness out and also to raise the money so we can continue this research that helps save hundreds of thousands of lives a year.
What's happening with research now? What's going on in 2016?
The problem with being a cardiologist is like something changes every day. I feel like I'm in school like every single day. It's continuing advances in terms of, I think there's basically two big paradigms. There's a paradigm of how do we prevent heart disease, right?
Okay.
And then there's a paradigm of once someone has had an event, how do we keep them from having another event? How do we keep them out of the hospital? How do we keep them having a good quality of life,
right?
And so you really have two grossly different aspects of cardiology, and the research is kind of aimed at basically those two things. I always tell my patients, I'd much rather prevent your heart attack than treat it.
Yeah.
Right? So I actually do not like taking care of people who have had heart attacks because it bothers me, because a lot of times there's things they could have done to prevent them from happening.
Right. So in addition to physical activity, you also mentioned low salt intake. Mm-hmm. What are some other things that people can be doing and should be doing?
I think it's about owning your own health And this is what I tell my patients. I know a lot of doctors get upset when patients ask why this, why that. But I think it's very important that patients own their own health. I'm not sure if you were at an event I did. There was a Go Red for Women breakfast about 3 years ago. And I was talking and I said to all the women in the room, if you know when your last mammogram was, raise your hand. And they all raised their hand. Mm-hmm. I said, okay, if you know when your last cholesterol panel was, raise your hand. About 30% of the same people kept their hands up. I said, if you know the result of that, what was it? And all the hands dropped.
Oh my God.
Right? So it goes to show you that we're not in control of our own health. And right. Women still have this stigma that, you know, they're very concerned about their breasts, which they should be, but that's not their number one killer, right?
Yeah.
So it's really about knowing your numbers. It's what is your cholesterol? What is your blood glucose? What should your weight be? What is your family history? That's a big one. You know, if your dad dropped dead of a heart attack at 38, that's an extraordinarily big risk factor.
Right.
Right. So it's about knowing your own health, eating a healthy diet. Okay. Low salt and low animal fats, not a lot of steak, not a lot of hamburgers, the good stuff,
right.
Basically. And watching your salt intake. And what I tell people realistically is, unless you're eating, you know, frozen foods every single day, mm-hmm. Or fast foods every single day, all you need to do is just not add salt to your food.
Okay. When you get into the issues of weight and healthy diet, mm-hmm. there's so many mixed messages about what to eat to lose weight, but you want to lose the weight so that you can be healthy to start and then exercise. There's the high carb, the high protein, the low carb, low mm-hmm. fat, you know, the cookie diet. Like what from a cardiologist's viewpoint is the best thing to do to lose weight healthfully, maintain weight loss, and do the best thing for your heart?
You know, if we're talking about clear-cut weight loss, you have to count calories.
Okay.
I mean, there's no other way of doing it. So the math behind caloric intake is 3,500 calories is a pound of fat. So if you're currently eating 2,000 calories a day and you go down to 1,500, that's 500 calories a day times 7 days in a week, that's 3,500 calories, you will lose a pound of fat.
Okay.
That's just mathematics behind it. Now, the way in which you do that, is it healthy or unhealthy, right?
Right.
Because you could eat 5 Snickers bars in a day and still be at 1,500 calories, but you're not doing it the healthy way, right? So, you know, there is a clear and distinct difference between trying to lose weight and trying to be healthy.
Okay.
Right? And does the health correlate with the weight? Yeah, it does. It does to some extent. I mean, you know, you'd be hard-pressed. And, you know, not to sound harsh, but find me an obese 85-year-old.
Right.
They don't exist. Right. I mean, they're very few and far between because they die.
Right.
So I tell my patients, I don't need you to look like a stick, but I need you to be at a healthy weight.
Okay.
Right. And there are, and there's a range of healthy weights. Healthy weights doesn't mean you're a size zero necessarily.
Right.
There's a range. But once you start kind of getting outside of that range, we know that the risk of heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, stroke goes up exponentially.
Okay. And the correlation between stroke and heart disease. How do the two impact each other? Because the heart association also works with the stroke.
Right. So, I mean, if you think about it, you have blood vessels in your brain just like you have blood vessels in your heart, right? So a stroke, there's two types of strokes. There's one where you bleed and there's one where you have a clot. And the one where you have a clot, just think about it as having a heart attack, but in your head. It's really no different.
Ugh.
Okay. So whereas a heart attack, you get extraordinary pain or chest pain or nausea or arm numbness. With a stroke, you kind of get those neurologic symptoms with the facial droop and the slurry speech. But it's basically this, you know, we call them brain attacks instead
right.
of heart attacks in the hospital.
Okay.
Same concept, same theory, same risk factors.
Okay. What about the recovery, the opportunities for recovery after a heart attack versus after a stroke?
It depends on how big each one of them were.
Okay.
Right. And both a heart attack and a stroke are extraordinarily dependent on time.
Okay.
The quicker you get treated, the more likely you are to fully recover.
Okay.
That is hands down the biggest thing. So I tell my patients, if you're having chest pain, I don't care what you think it is, go to the hospital.
Okay.
Because if you wait at home for 12 hours, the odds of you recuperating fully from that heart attack are very low.
And what about taking aspirin?
That's a tough one. that continues to change too. But really, it boils down to risk factors, right? So if you've already had a heart attack, you're going to be on a baby aspirin for the rest of your life, hands down. But if you have certain risk factors, if you're a diabetic, overweight, high blood pressure, dad dropped dead of 35 at a heart attack. Those patients we know are much higher risk and are probably put on a baby aspirin. But for the general public to take a baby aspirin as a preventative measure is no longer recommended.
Okay. What about when you hear stories about someone who said they thought they were having chest pains, they took a couple aspirin, called 911, but they think the aspirin saved their lives?
It could have.
Okay. So it really can make that kind of impact.
It can. 100%. There is no better medication still to date and treating a heart attack than good old aspirin.
Amazing. Yeah. Okay. Again, we're speaking with Dr. Tiffany Sizemore, cardiologist and president of the board of directors for the American Heart Association. This coming Saturday, April 23rd, is the annual Broward Heart Walk. We're expecting somewhere around 10,000 people to come and join us at Southeastern University.
Luckily, Nova's big enough, so that's my alma mater.
Oh, well, congratulations. I'm sure they're happy to have you back there. Are you you're going to be at the Heart Walk?
Yes, I'll be there.
Okay. Mm-hmm. What can people expect when they come?
A lot of people. A lot of water, a good time. The different sponsors have different booths, and you'll see different colored shirts walking around from different people. But it's really just a good time, a lot of education. Basically, if anyone wants to be involved with the Heart Association, we're kind of floating around everywhere there. We ask people to bring their kids, if they want to bring their dogs, and just come and have a good time and try and help propagate the awareness of heart disease.
Okay, and it's free. So you don't have to pay. You can get an official Heart Walk t-shirt if you raise $100.
Yep.
But you don't have to. You can just come out and join us. Easy 93.1 will be there. Dr. Tiffany will be there. And, of course, all the folks from the Heart Association. What kind of information can people expect to get to learn about heart disease and taking care of themselves?
The easiest way is going to basically heart.org. And goredforwomen.org as well. There are bullet points, there's pamphlets, there's videos, there's YouTube videos. I mean, anything you want to know or learn about heart disease can be found on our website.
Okay, heart.org. Now, we've been focusing a lot on the physical activity and some of the things one can do to prevent heart disease. Let's talk about the risk factors.
Mm-hmm.
You've mentioned family history. Mm-hmm. You mentioned obesity.
Biggest risk factors, family history, meaning that a first-degree male relative had their first cardiac event prior to age 50 and prior to age 60 for females. Being diabetic is a major risk factor. Having high cholesterol is a risk factor. Having high blood pressure is a risk factor. And then obviously your own personal history. If you've had a heart attack, your odds of having another one are obviously quite high. And a BMI, your body mass index as well, which is basically a height weight ratio, and that looks at whether someone's overweight or not. And when it comes to that, I think it's an important point to make. If you're a lady and you've got big legs but a little waist, and the same thing with a guy, that's actually a lower risk factor than having a very large circumference waist.
Okay.
So the waist diameter or waist circumference is actually, when it comes to weight, is where we really look at.
Okay,
in terms
something
of risk
in
factor.
That particular fat.
Correct.
In that area that increases.
It's called central obesity, and that's what increases our risk even more.
Okay. Age range.
Mm-hmm.
I am sure that people walk around going, I'm only X age. I'm not going to have a heart attack.
Yeah, I've seen a 35-year-old female walk in having a massive heart attack, so I don't really pay attention to that.
I love you're just so matter-of-fact about it.
If you're going to look statistically, of course, the older you get, the more likely you are to have that cholesterol build up over, X number of years. But there was a big study, I believe it was the Korean War, where they did autopsies on these soldiers, and they noticed starting at age 19 years old, there started to be cholesterol buildup in the arteries in the neck.
Wow.
So we know it starts early, right? And it just common sense tells you the longer you live, the more calcium you're going to have, the more plaque deposits you're going to have. So age is, of course, somewhat of a risk factor. And going back to risk factors, I didn't even say it because I thought it was common sense, smoking, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
That's
wow.
That's a big one.
Right.
But what's the reason, and I try and tell people this, the reason smoking causes heart disease and disease in your brain and your legs, arterial disease in general, is there's a lining of your arteries. Think about it like a saran wrap on Tupperware, right?
Okay.
And that saran wrap is what keeps the bugs out and the air out, and it keeps whatever's in that container fresh, okay? Your arteries have something very similar called an endothelium, and it's what keeps the arteries nice and smooth and happy. And when you smoke, it's like taking a toothpick and poking it in the saran wrap. Okay. And so it starts to break down that nice, happy lining. And then it allows the bad stuff to creep in and start building up. And that's what smoking does to your arteries. Okay. Its cancer-causing properties are completely different.
Wow.
But in the arteries, it actually breaks down the protective barrier. And that's why we see people in their 30s walking into the hospital having massive heart attacks, because their healthy barrier at 35 years old has been broken.
Does the Heart Association have information about quitting smoking?
Yes, it's all on on heart.org.
Heart.org. Yep. Let's talk a little bit about the symptoms. We hear that it's different for women, it's different for men. And also, if you think something is happening, the different reactions from women and men.
Yeah, I mean, women, you know, I'm a doctor, I see men and women, but when it comes to someone thinking something's wrong with them, the man is the first one to walk in the office. I mean, I have to like drag my women patients into the office. You know, they can have like a hangnail in their pinky and they'll be in. When it comes to the classic massive heart attack that you imagine, you see on TV, or someone's grabbing their chest.
Right.
Those patients always have, they're called STEMIs, and those patients 99.99% of the time always has that crushing elephant sitting in my chest pain.
Okay.
But there are different types of heart attacks, and they're not all necessarily that type. And women can have more atypical symptoms, what we call, than men, right? So men typically always get that kind of somewhat of chest pain. Sometimes it goes down the arm and sometimes up the neck. Women can also... Well, men can too, but women sometimes have a more predominance of nausea. They feel extraordinarily fatigued. I had a patient in my office that I had to pull it out of her because she wasn't telling me. But once I pulled it out of her, you know, she plays rounds of tennis every day, 3-4 rounds of tennis, and she woke up one day and could only play 2 rounds before she got tired. That's a problem.
Wow.
I mean, why all of a sudden today can you only play 2 rounds when yesterday you could play 4, right? Huh. And that was her symptom. And she was having a heart attack. So, you know, I try and tell patients, it's not all, when you wake up, unless obviously you have the flu or you're sick, but when you wake up from one day to the next and you don't have the stamina on Monday that you had on Sunday, that's weird. That's not normal.
Isn't it? Right? Wouldn't people just go, oh, I must have the flu?
Sure. I mean, but that's why it's so important to be seen by your doctor, right? I mean, your doctor should be able to know if you have the flu versus you have no other symptoms except for the fact that you're extraordinarily fatigued. So the symptoms it's scary because they're very easily overlooked. So, you know, my rule of thumb is if male, female, cat, dog, I don't care. If you walk into the ER and you have pain from your belly button up, you better have an EKG.
Okay. Right. What changes is someone going to have to look at if they have a heart attack? How is their life going to be completely different?
Well, you know, it depends again on the time, right? So if they got to the hospital at an early time and their heart function is recuperated fully, they will probably live a completely normal life without having any symptoms. But they can't expect to be on probably 3 or 4 medications for the rest of their life.
Okay.
I mean, there's no coming off those medications. It doesn't matter how extraordinary your blood pressure is and how extraordinary your cholesterol is. Those medications protect that person from having another heart attack.
Okay.
Now, if someone waited 12 hours and they have their artery opened or not opened or whatever that could be done, and their heart function significantly decreased. I mean, you're talking about a very bad quality of life. Walking one flight of stairs, have to sit down and take a breath because their heart function cannot keep up with what their body's doing. So it's all time.
I don't know how to say this and make it not sound like I'm dissing the medical industry.
No.
But I get a sense that in some ways, because medicine has come so far and you can do so much to save people, that people are lax. Because, oh, well, look at Dave Letterman. He had quadruple bypass surgery. He's fine. I'll be fine. And they think the doctors can save us. They can fix everything.
Nothing's as good as God.
Yeah.
I mean, what we were born with is as good as it gets. And, you know, nothing we do will ever be as good as what nature made for us. You know, I see that as well. I had a patient yesterday and I looked at him and I said, you need to be on blood pressure medicine, but we could have the conversation of diet and exercise. But I need you to tell me if you're actually going to do it, because if you're not going to do it, I'm going to put you on the medicine. And he looked right at me. He says, just put me on the medicine because I'm not going to do it. But at least they're honest, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
People have to be forthcoming with their doctor. And, you know, so I was unhappy that he wasn't willing to make lifestyle changes, but I was happy at the fact that he was honest with me about it. But nothing is as good as what nature made for us. Nothing. No stint in the world is going to be as good as the one that was put in us by mom and dad, right?
So, yeah, right.
It's unfortunate that people think that way. But, you know, having all these advances, it's so many things in medicine can be prevented. And don't get me wrong, there's some things that cannot be. And you could be the healthiest person in the world and still get, you know, colon cancer.
Right.
But the vast majority of heart attacks can be prevented.
And that all comes back to you taking the steps and what you said, owning your health.
You have to own your health. Okay. You have to own your health.
All right. So we want to urge you again to get your physical activity. As little as 30 minutes a day can make an incredible difference in your life, the span of your life, the quality of your life.
Correct.
And what a better way to start than to come out and join us this coming Saturday, April 23rd, at the Broward Heart Walk with the American Heart Association, 8 a.m. at Nova Southeastern University. Come and meet Dr. Tiffany, Sizemore, who is an incredible brain trust, an incredible cardiologist, and she will not beat around the bush. She'll tell you things exactly as they are.
Okay.
And sometimes that's what we need, is to have the, you know, the come to Jesus conversation where someone says
I use that term all the time. I say, Tanisha, you and I, we're going to have a come to Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, and patients, they're appreciative of it, right?
Okay.
I'm not going to sugarcoat if something very bad's happening to someone.
Right.
There's a way and a manner in which to say everything, but you know, people, they need to understand and take the time. And I'm going to use this as kind of, if you don't mind my platform too, if you're a patient and you're unhappy with your physician or you don't feel like you can talk to your physician, find another one.
Okay.
Right? Because you need to have a relationship to where you feel like you can confide in and be honest with your doctor.
Okay. That's critical.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Where can someone reach you if they want to talk to you or come make an appointment, get information?
My private practice is called Cardiac Care at Choice Physicians, and our office number is 954-523-4141.
Where are you located?
I am literally across the street from Broward Health Medical Center in downtown Fort Lauderdale.
Okay. And the Heart Association, again, is heart.org. And while you're at the website, some things to look for. It's what they call My Life Check, Life's Simple 7. They call it Know Your Heart Score, which consists of the things that we've been talking about: manage your blood pressure, control your cholesterol, reduce your blood sugar, get active, eat better, lose weight, and of course, stop smoking. And then they also have some really helpful articles about understanding blood pressure. What is your target heart rate when you're doing that 30 minutes of exercise? Good cholesterol versus bad cholesterol, and all of the warning signs that you want to watch for. And of course, you can get the information about the Broward Heart Walk as well. In fact, there's a place where you can just put in your zip code. It'll give you the local information, or just show up at Nova Southeastern University. You don't have to pre-register, and it doesn't cost anything. So we hope to see you next Saturday.
We do.
Yes. Dr. Tiffany Sizemore, cardiologist, president of the board of directors of the American Heart Association. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Ellen. Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to Easy's Community Focus. Thank you to our guest from the American Heart Association and Choice Physician South Florida, Dr. Tiffany Sizemore. I'm Ellen Jaffe. If you have comments or would like to suggest a topic, email me at ellen@easy93.com.